It's Jasmine, I'm the News Collective Lead, and I will be your host for today's episode. This week's episode will focus on the local community's response to recent events in Iran, including the passing of Mahsa Amini, also known as Jina Amini. After the break, we'll start with our first segment, an interview with UBC community member Romina Hajizada about her thoughts on the recent events and its significance within the larger socio-political context.
It's alive. Megamall's debut EP, Escape from Lizard City, goes live on Friday, July 1st. Buy the cassette and lyric book on Bandcamp or stream wherever you listen to music. For the last 2.5 years, you could avoid everyone except yourself. Welcome to Lizard City.
Hi, everyone, and thank you for tuning in. For our first segment today, I will be talking to Romina Hajizada, a student at UBC and a member of the Iranian-Canadian diaspora, about her thoughts of the passing of Mahsa Jina Amini and the response to her death in an international context. Romina, can you introduce yourself, please?
Sure. Hi, everyone. My name is Romina. My pronouns are she and her. I'm a third-year student at UBC studying international relations and minoring in Middle East studies, and I'm very grateful to be here. Thank you so much.
Thank you for introducing yourself. Romina, can you tell me a bit more about your relationship with the Iranian community and your understanding of the significance of Mahsa Jina Amini's death?
Yeah, of course. So I'm very much diaspora, like you said. I was born and raised in Canada, but both of my parents are Iranian and my family lineage is all Iran. So I was very much, I'd like to say very immersed in Iranian Canadian culture, but also at the same time, very, very detached from Iran because I've actually never been to Iran before. I was not born there. And that's been a very big part of my experience as an Iranian Canadian is kind of grappling with kind of not belonging there, not exactly belonging in Canada either. I feel like I'm very connected, at least to my Iranian heritage, as much as I can be. You know, I struggle with Farsi and I also have never been to Iran. So I do feel detached in a lot of ways, but I also really love my culture and love our community. I think the death of Mahsa Amini has really taken a huge toll on the Iranian community around the world, but it's elicited a very beautiful response of unity from everyone, just because I think everyone in one way or another, if you're Iranian or you identify with Iranian identity in any way, you've been affected by what's going on in Iran over the last 40 years in some sort of capacity. And so I think this felt very close to home for a lot of people. It felt close to home for me as a young woman I'm only 3 years younger than her. It's very significant and it really reflects the experiences of a lot of Iranian people, both in the diaspora and in Iran.
Can you elaborate on what you mean by those experiences?
Yeah, of course. So I guess within Iran, I can't speak too much to it. I can only speak to what I've heard, but I definitely understand that a lot of women have been impacted in some way by the morality police, which is what happened to Mahsa Amini. My mother grew up in Iran and she was around 12 when the revolution happened. And that was very difficult for her also because my mother is not Muslim. So it was a very major transition. She was just hitting puberty as well. So the mandatory hijab law came into place and her life completely changed. And just in general, the way, especially for women, the way that laws are written in Iran, it does not serve women in the same way that it serves men. It's a very, very patriarchal society. And it's affected men a lot as well. You know, it's a society that's very imbalanced and people are not happy with that. It's very devastating. So within Iran, like there's just been a lot of restrictions on freedom in that capacity, especially for women, like just the basic freedom to wear what you want to wear and have a choice in that, whether that be wearing hijab or not wearing hijab. And then, of course, around the world, I mean, there's a quote I read online. I can't exactly quote it, but I'll try to paraphrase it. It's like, if you're Iranian, you are definitely in some way affected by what has happened since the regime change in 1979. Every Iranian has had something taken from them. For my parents, it was their future in Iran, the future that they dreamed of, because they were, again, like only 12 or 13 when the revolution happened, and they had to leave when they were younger than my age. and leave their whole family, leave everything behind to come to Canada. For me, it took away a lot of my relationship with Iran, a relationship that I could have had, because again, like if things were different in Iran, I probably would not be in Canada and I wouldn't be speaking English and I'd have a completely different life. So it's definitely, I don't know, I hope that's still on topic, but that's kind of my answer as to that.
Absolutely. Thank you for speaking about that. I think your story is a very powerful one. And I think that you've touched a lot on the loss that you've experienced, but I would also like to learn a bit more about what you think you've gained in understanding like what is happening and participating in like the protests and unrest and resistance, the unity that you mentioned. What do you think you might have gained in this experience as well?
Absolutely. I think I gained a much better understanding of what life is actually like in Iran, because I never really had that for my own lived experience. And participating in some of the dialogue that's been going on since like mid-September when this all happened, I've gotten to have a lot of conversations with a very diverse range of Iranian people, Muslim and non-Muslim, ethnic minorities. And it's shed a lot of insights that I did not realize. For example, again, Jina Amini, Mahsa Amini, was a Kurdish woman, and I did not understand the extent to which ethnic minorities are persecuted in Iran. But I definitely think that's an important consideration, especially in my conversations with Kurdish Iranians, as to how they've been impacted by this and how their life has been impacted as being a Kurdish person in Iran, and just the difference in the way that they're treated by the police, by the government, by society in general. So that has definitely helped heighten my understanding and give me a more nuanced picture of Iran, because again, I only have my picture, and that's a very fragmented one. It's very separated from the reality on the ground. I only really know what I grew up with in Canada, so it's not a vision from Iran itself. And I'll never exactly have that image, but at least I can sort of piece it together from my conversations. But at the end of the day, I've also understood that everyone in Iran really comes together for a love for their country. And that's been really beautiful, is that even though we have these differences, we all have a love for Iran and we want to see unity and peace come to Iran. And so that's been very beautiful to see in spite of everything.
Can you tell me more about these conversations you mentioned? Were they formal, informal? Where did they take place?
Absolutely. So some of these have been informal settings. I know the UBC Persian Club and different communities on campus are organizing spaces for dialogue and healing. And I really, really encourage people to come to those, whether you're Iranian or not. It's a really great experience to learn. Again, I'm Iranian Canadian, and I left those conversations, those spaces, knowing so much more. And so they're all advertised on their social media. But a lot of them have also been informal with my friends who are Iranian, but we never really talked about our experience growing up as Iranian together. I have just a lot of friends that happen to be Iranian, but we don't necessarily talk about that always. Or with people who are not Iranian, who are asking me questions because I am like visibly Iranian and, you know, open about my Iranian identity and everything like that. So yeah, both a mix of informal and formal settings.
Uh-huh. Can you tell me more about what frustrates you in these conversations, or any misconceptions that people have, especially those outside of the Iranian community, or even those who are in the Iranian community but might not have the lived experience of being an Iranian woman, or, you know, just the nuances that happen in these conversations?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there have been some things that have made me honestly a little bit upset. I've seen some things online that just I feel like are not conducive to unity, and that's exactly what the Iranian community needs right now around the world and in Iran, is unity. Like, everyone needs to stand together with the same ultimate goal, which everyone does have the same goal, really, is to have a peaceful Iran. I believe in that. But I also have seen some things that I feel have derailed the efforts that especially women have been making in Iran, people kind of changing the subject into things that it's not really about exactly, in my opinion. Like, for example, I don't even know if everything that's going on in Iran is exactly about religion, to be honest. That's my personal opinion, like completely transparent, but I don't even know if it's entirely about religion. So I don't think it's always a conducive thing to turn it into a conversation about, you know, oh, it's a, like something, you know what I mean? Exactly. I don't know exactly how to articulate it, but I've seen some things, especially with like women burning their hijabs, people turning it into a completely different conversation, when in reality, this is more so an act of resistance against a dress code than anything. That's my personal opinion. But that being said, I think everyone is coming from a good place, and I try not to get frustrated too often with other people's perspectives, because really we can learn from each other's perspectives on this issue. And so, you know, people might have a different opinion than me on different things, and that's totally okay, because as long as we're able to have a conversation and work together and move forward together, I think that's what matters ultimately.
And would you be comfortable telling me more about your relationship to their religious context in Iran?
Yeah, sure. I'm a member of a religious minority, so I'm actually not Muslim. And that definitely shapes a little bit of how I look at things in Iran, because things like, for example, compulsory hijab, like when that happened and my mom had to go through that, that's not something that my mom or her family ever were going to participate in. And it was very, I think, difficult for her to have to go through. And also just, again, being a member of a religious minority, if you aren't the majority religion, you do face higher rates of persecution in Iran. And that's like a known fact, and you can look up the statistics. Some religions aren't even allowed to identify with. And I have friends from religious minorities who actually lived in Iran who have gone through very significant hardships that have led them to have to leave the country, or to just ultimately they face major restrictions in even practicing, and so they can't openly practice. And this is something that isn't talked about very often, but it needs to be talked about. And so yeah, I think it's just a matter of like wanting there to be freedom and a space for like religious plurality and freedom for that within Iran, which there isn't really. And so when you see women taking off their hijabs, you don't know their story. You don't know exactly why they're doing that. And so, you know, I think we just need to have a society where women, if she wants to wear hijab, she can wear hijab. If she doesn't want to wear hijab, she shouldn't have to wear hijab. It's totally up to her. And if she shows a little bit of hair wearing hijab, probably like Mahsa Amini was, that's okay as well. You shouldn't die over that. That's the point, right? You shouldn't be sent to a detention center over that, sent to jail over that. I think that's what people are trying to get at. It's about freedom of choice for women, regardless. So, yeah.
What do you think is the importance of centering women in these conversations?
I think it's so important because, again, like Iran is very much a male-dominated society. And this is something that Iranian men acknowledge as well. So, you know, for many years, Iranian women, their voice has not been considered in the conversation as much, like the experience of being a woman in Iran. But it's so important to understanding what that lived experience is like and what it's going through. And I don't even think I'm the best woman to be the person to say that, because I haven't lived in Iran and I haven't gone through that experience. I think it's better to even ask an Iranian woman who's lived in Iran, who grew up there, who's had to wear compulsory hijab since grade 2, and ask them what their life has been like and how they feel living there. So yeah, I think it's extremely important to understanding like the nuances of the situation.
And what is frustrating to you about how Western society, how Canadian society might misunderstand the situation in Iran and the kind of patriarchal setting there?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question. I'm trying to think exactly how I've seen that. I feel like, I don't know, some people can just paint it. One thing I have seen is some people paint like all Iranian men as bad because they benefit from the system, which I think is not true. And it's very much painting with a broad paintbrush of the situation. A lot of Iranian men are not happy with the situation and are on the streets with women every day. And I think that should be noted, you know, and they are fighting for the same thing as well. And a lot of the protest chants are about, you know, fighting for their sisters because they don't want to see horrible things happen to them. So that's been one thing that I think I have seen a little bit in terms of Western narratives about Iran that I don't think is entirely true. There are some people that have grown up in that society and feel that way, but the vast majority of Iranian men that I've talked to support the women and want to see women's liberation, ultimately. I hope that kind of answers your question somewhat.
Absolutely. And just in general, how has, you know, witnessing this unity, participating in this unity, affected your understanding of solidarity and international solidarity?
Yeah, I think it's given me a lot of hope for international solidarity, like seeing people all over the world come together every single week to, again, speak for Iran and to give them a voice. I think that's been really beautiful. Everything that happened in, I believe, Berlin just a couple of days ago, where I think it was over, I saw some stats saying over 100,000 people. I'm not sure exactly what is accurate, but the photos that do, like, they do all the talking, really, of how many people are there together for Iranian people. I don't know. It's given me a lot of hope, because a lot of times the thing is, this is not the first time that there have been protests in Iran and people have spoken out against the way that society is there. You know, I mean, even in 2019, I think there were protests over oil. There was the Green Revolution. That wasn't too long ago either. But oftentimes we talk and we maybe get together once or twice and then things end. But it's been over 5 weeks now and people are still consistently doing this. And I think that's been very powerful. It's been very emotional for me, but very beautiful. And so it gives me a lot of hope. But yeah.
Absolutely. What do you think is the significance of Mahsa Amini's death? Why do you think that her death in particular has sparked such outrage? Or maybe it's not about Mahsa Amini herself, but maybe the timing. Why do you think this is all happening now and with her?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think it's bigger than her. Like, she is kind of a symbol for a lot of different things that have been going on in Iranian society that we haven't talked about necessarily in like a global setting, but her death has really shed light on a lot of these things. It's not just about compulsory hijab. It's about many, many, many other things that have piled up on Iranian society over the last 40 years, that 40 plus years, that people want to see different. Again, like I mentioned earlier, she's also a member of an ethnic minority, and that's a very important part of this conversation, kind of the experience of being a minority in Iran. What is that like? The experience of being a woman in Iran, and her experience, again, with the morality police, is, again, something that, like, so many Iranian women have had experience in their life and have never had an opportunity to talk about it, because where can they talk about it? Where is there a platform for them to speak about their experience? But finally there is. So yeah, I don't know. I think it's something that I didn't see coming. I didn't think this time was in particular different at all, necessarily. I mean, there was the flight crash in 2020. That was a big thing. And that started to spark international dialogue on Iran and about politics in Iran and, like, society in general. And I think that could be something that played into it somewhat. You see a lot of people from that movement coming into this movement, and, again, just people coming together over this. And that was particularly strong for the Iranian-Canadian community, because the flight crash in 2020 was majority Iranian-Canadian people impacted. And we saw friends, families that are local, very close to UBC and close to other areas, pass away. And that was very impactful. So
can you tell me more about those other issues that you mentioned that are piling up?
Yeah. So some of those issues, again, are just, like, from what I understand, and of course I have quite a limited understanding because I haven't lived in Iran, so I don't know exactly what it's like, but again, just kind of the imbalances and inequities in society. Another thing has been the economy that I think a lot of people talk about, and how I think over the past few years it's significantly deteriorated in Iran from what I understand. And just, like, the opportunities are a lot more limited now for a lot of people. The majority of Iranian people are not living in wealth, they're living in poverty, and they're having a very difficult time. And also, just, there was something else I was thinking of that I forgot to mention. What else has happened recently? Just, yeah, over the past 2 years, I think things have gone significantly more difficult for people. And yeah, I mean, it's just the restrictions as well. I think another part of this conversation that we could talk about is, like, academic freedom, even to a certain extent. Like, everything that happened at Sharif University recently as well during the protests, that's very relevant to our experience at UBC. If we talk about academic freedom, which we love to talk about at this university, that the attack on Sharif University is a direct attack on academic freedom and on being an intellectual in Iran and wanting to have something to say. Sharif University is one of the top schools in Iran. It's like, you know, you hear people saying the Harvard or MIT of Iran. That's how high ranking of a school it is and how difficult it is to get into it. And so when you see police block off the school, lock people inside the school, that's very disturbing. And it kind of highlights maybe some social cleavages that have been in Iran for a while regarding education and access to education. But I'm not entirely sure, to be honest with you, because I haven't lived there.
Can you tell me more about the incident at the university?
I can tell you a little bit from what I understand. So basically, I'm not exactly sure what date it was now, but it was probably a couple of weeks ago where students at the university and some professors began protesting against the regime as well. So before, the academic community wasn't entirely involved, but then I think about like maybe 2 weeks into it, they started protesting. And then, it's something like if you imagine the police coming to UBC and like blocking off the school, locking people inside, and not allowing people to leave. It's like you kind of are just like, how can a country do that? How can police do that? How is that seen as okay? But this is what happened in Iran with Sharif University, I believe, is they basically blocked off the school. I don't exactly know the details of what ended up happening, but this has also spread to other universities across Iran, not just Sharif University, but universities all over the country have been protesting. And it's been, basically like an entire raid on their campuses. So I hope that kind of, sorry, it's not too much details, but yeah.
And what do you think the role of universities like UBC, other like prestigious international universities are in supporting academic freedom in Iran?
Yeah, I think it's really important that UBC takes a stance and has solidarity with the academic community in Iran as well. That reminds me of a situation that happened a bit ago that I believe the UBC Human Rights Collective was even talking about themselves, was about an instructor or a professor from Europe who actually is in Evin prison, which is also, there's a whole other situation with Evin prison, but that is one of the most notorious political prisons in Iran. It was recently on fire during the protests. This academic was in Iran and he was subsequently arrested and he's still in, I believe, Evin prison and has not been permitted to leave for many years. And so it's something where it's like universities around the world, including UBC, should definitely be taking time to stand with the Iranian community and also stand for academic freedom in that context. And also support bringing Iranian students here, I think, is a big thing. A lot of our best and brightest students at UBC, whether graduate or undergraduate, are from Iran. A lot of our UBC graduate students are Sharif University alumni or alumni of other schools in Iran. So, one thing that could be advocated for, and this is something that the UBC Persian Club has been pushing for as well, is kind of being more compassionate with admissions this cycle for them and giving some deadlines or extended deadlines for them so that they have time to still apply. Because obviously, right now, if your country is in massive protest, you're probably not thinking about putting together an application for grad school, right? So, things like that. And taking steps to really support the existing Iranian community that we have on campus as well. I think that's something that Iranian students have wanted to see, whether that be, again, more compassionate circumstances for academic concessions, things like that, just allowing Iranian students to have space to grieve and process what's going on, but also continue their work and succeed in school, finding a balance with that.
Can you tell me more about what kind of accommodations and what kind of support you would like to see for the Iranian community at UBC?
Yeah, absolutely. Kind of like I just said, like I think it'd be really nice if there's an academic concession policy that allows, kind of like with COVID, where if you had COVID, you were basically automatically permitted a concession. I think this is something that would really benefit Iranian students is like if you have a concession related to the circumstances in Iran, if you have family in Iran, if you are feeling like very, very overwhelmed because of this. I know myself, like, I have not been able to focus on any of my homework assignments, like, for more than 5 minutes because my brain goes back to what's going on and I have to look at the news. This is something that could probably be of big relief to Iranian students. And I'm sure that academic concessions, they are probably processing them for Iranian students already, but a more kind of advertised stance of that would probably be very helpful for Iranian students. Maybe some grants as well if students need them, if they're facing financial hardship because of everything going on in Iran. These are all things that I think could help Iranian students. And also, just again, publicly standing with Iranian students and continuing to message that they support them and that they support the protests in Iran as well and support what people are fighting for there. And yeah, I think also just making sure that that message is disseminated to faculty and staff as well, and that there are steps in place to support Iranian faculty and staff as well, because I think they also really need the support. So yeah, I hope that kind of answers your question a little bit.
I'm also curious to know what kind of support you'd like to see from other students, especially non-Iranian students, about how they can support an Iranian community members on campus.
Yeah, I think it's really good to just speak to your Iranian friends and peers and like kind of just take an effort to learn about what's going on. I think that's a very important thing. I think the burden of talking about what's going on in Iran and about Mahsa Amini has really been put on Iranian people, and it's overwhelming. Like there's a lot of work that is being done, but we cannot do it alone. And I think it's really important that if you are curious and you've heard what's going on in Iran, to ask your friends and to learn from them and learn from their lived experience. I think, yeah, there's some people that still don't even know what's going on. And they're like, oh, like a girl died, or oh, there's protests, but they don't know exactly why these are happening and the wider context regarding it. So I think it's just really important to, it's okay to ask questions and it's okay to have a conversation. I think Iranian people are more than willing to have a conversation about this. So that's my suggestion.
And do you think that there are any ways for non-Iranian students and community members to kind of ease that emotional burden and take away some of the emotional labor that you have to put into explaining what is happening to us? Any resources that you would like to direct people to?
Yeah, the UBC Persian Club has been doing a lot to open up spaces for dialogue and support Iranian students. So I definitely recommend reaching out to them and looking at the programming they're offering. AMS Peer Support also is a great resource if you want peer support, of course, in the name. And they've also issued direct messaging on Iran, and they're more than happy to chat. There's a lot of great mental health resources at UBC, UBC Counseling Services. These are all great, and I really recommend that students reach out to them if they need someone to talk to. I know UBC Persian Club has had some counseling events with UBC Counseling Services because I believe they do have a Farsi-speaking counselor. So if you're Iranian yourself and you prefer to communicate in Farsi, that's an option available. And I think I'm not too sure, but I think they may be working to do more of those. So yeah, I guess just keeping up with that online and again, reaching out if you need support, applying for concessions when you need them. These are all things that I think are good steps to take.
And just to make sure that we end off this interview on a more hopeful note, how do you think, or what have you been personally doing for yourself to give yourself the space and the time to heal and to think things through, to really grant yourself that kind of compassion and care during this time?
Yeah, I don't know. I think being more in touch with the Iranian community on campus has helped me a bit. I wasn't previously that involved with them at all. But I think like talking to my Iranian friends and like just being with other people has helped me a lot. And talking about the situation has helped me kind of process things. I don't know. I think this is something that again has been on the minds of Iranian people forever. It's not like this started now. Like people have thought about the situation for a long time, and it's something that's weighed on them. I never thought I'd ever be able to go to Iran. I still don't know if I'll ever be able to go to Iran. That's something that I've had to live with. I've had to live with that detachment from my culture. But things that help me is just trying my best to be in tune with it, trying my best to be in tune with other people, listen to other people, talk about my experience. Having those spaces for dialogue has been very helpful for me.
And is there anything else that you'd like to talk about before we wrap up?
Just thank you for the opportunity to speak a bit. Again, like my perspective is a very limited one, and there are other people on campus that I'm sure can provide more context. But yeah, so I'm just very happy to have the opportunity to speak. If people ever want to reach out to me about what's going on, they're more than welcome to. I have Instagram, everything. I don't know. My Instagram's just my name. It's a very long name though, but you can find it. Yeah, if people want to reach out anytime, please do. I know it's a difficult situation, and I'm here to talk to anyone. So, yeah.
Thank you, Amina. I appreciate your time and the care that you've put into this conversation. I think that about wraps up all of my questions for today. So thank you again. And thank you to all of our listeners who have been paying attention. And hopefully you've been able to learn something about what is happening, why Mahsa Amini's death is important, but also why this issue is more than just one person. And that you are able to really take Ramina's advice to heart.
We all know that the word jazz means many different things to many different people. So check out the real deal on The Jazz Show at CITR 101.9 FM or CITR.ca for live streaming. Yours truly, Gavin Walker, is your host, and I guarantee the straight goods of 3 hours of jazz at its finest. The jazz feature that focuses on a concept, an album, or an individual artist will be heard at the beginning of the show every Monday night right at 9 p.m. after our opening theme and announcement. So come on by and give your ears a musical workout, 9 p.m. Mondays. Don't miss it.
To tell you that Vancouver has a housing problem.
Mass evictions.
Mass rent evictions.
Unfair rent increases.
What happened to rent control and protection from unfair eviction?
If these or other housing matters concern you, you may be interested in joining the Vancouver Tenants Union. For more information, visit tenantsunion.ca.
Welcome back, everyone, and thank you for tuning in to Against the Current, brought to you by CITR 101.9. For our next segment, we'll be having an interview with an Iranian international student at SFU about her experience coping with recent events in Iran and her thoughts on protests and resistance efforts here in Canada. Okay, so can you tell me more about yourself and your relationship with the Iranian community?
Hi, my name is Niku. I'm a member of Persian Canadian community, and I've been living here for the past 2 years. And currently, I'm studying at Simon Fraser University, majoring in health sciences. For the past 3 years, I traveled 2 times to Iran, and each time that I've been there, things got worse and worse and worse, and now we are here. As a member of the Persian community, I always try to attend all the events and ceremonies and celebrate the Persian New Year or any other holiday. I have so many Persian friends at school or at work, and you are always in touch with our families back home, which are the greatest support here.
Thank you. And just to clarify, are you an international student?
Yes.
Okay, sounds good. And what is your understanding of the significance of the death of Mahsa Amini?
Actually, what has been started in Iran after the death of Mahsa Amini means a lot to me. It means if the regime executed our parents' generation and silenced them, they cannot silence my generation, even if they shoot and kill the entire generation. People of Iran, especially women and girls, are much more powerful and braver than what I thought. But now they are fighting with Iran police with empty hands. They killed, raped in prisons. They know what will happen to them if police arrest them, but they are still fighting for their rights. You know, enough is enough. They should not kill the people or threaten them because of their beliefs, their ethnicity, their religion, or even for their gender. It is not fair at all. Mahsa's murder was like an alarm for Iranian people and women, which woke them up and made them understand that they should take back their lost freedom from the hands of this murder. And this is the only way to compensate for the bloodshed of Mahsa.
Uh-huh. Why do you think her death has sparked such international outrage and represents larger issues in Iran and in the Iranian community?
Well, Mahsa Amini's death and the current protests show how frustrated people in Iran are, and it's not only for the people inside the country. All over around the world, you can see Persians expressing their hate against the Iranian regime. It's been more than 40 years that women are isolated in society and they don't have any freedom. They don't have any choice about what they wear. They are not allowed to enter any sports stadium apart from the women's freedom. People in Iran also suffering from very difficult financial hardships that make them to somehow lower their life expectations and live with the poverty. And also the current policies caused a huge drop in our currency value. And so all of these reasons caused a huge outrage among the people who are living in the country, or even everyone who moved to a different country all over the world, in either in Europe, North America, or anywhere else.
And what's your understanding of the larger context of her death? And what about the context of her death do you think people outside of the Iranian community might be misunderstanding or taking advantage of?
Well, I don't see anybody outside the community taking advantage of her death. But there might be some misunderstanding about her death, which can be the idea of people in Iran are so religious. Which in fact, this is not true, or they may think that people in Iran are pro-regime, which again is not true.
I see. How have you been personally affected by the recent events in Iran?
As you may know, the government of Iran shut down the internet, and I couldn't have any video calls with my family in Iran for about 3 weeks, and now we can only chat and send emails to each other. And you know, it's a scary and like make me nervous, because Iran police are battling protesters and shooting every people who are in the streets. So I'm worried about my family, my parents and my brother, because they have to go outside the home for their work and school, and they actually are taking risks their lives every day, any moment that I cannot like reach them and they are not online, I think by myself, are they alive? Can I see their faces one more time? I completely lose my concentration and my work and study due to these recent events in my home country. Also, most of the jobs and employment did a strike in protesting against the regime, and my father's job was affected by these strikes, so he won't be able to send my tuition fee, and it gives me a lot of pressure and stress. Also to him, as a father who always supports his daughter.
I'm very sorry to hear that. Have you participated in any of the protests and solidarity efforts with Iran here in like the Vancouver area?
Yes, every Saturday during past month, I participated in protests to show my sisters and friends in Iran we are standing with them and support them. And we are one of them, not apart from them, because they are living here. My participation means for me and my friends that I can understand their feelings, and the only way I can be their voice is that to participate in protests in Vancouver to tell people and news who are living in Canada what's happening in Iran against the women's rights and human rights, to make an action for people of Iran.
What inspires you about the current protests and unrest?
You know, thinking that all the people of Iran, of every ethnicity, religion, and way of thinking, united together after 43 years against the wishes of the Iranian regime. And they all want to one thing, and that is freedom, is an inspiration to me. It's a shame because I myself suffered because of this deprivation of freedom as a girl, and most importantly, as a human being, from my society, about the choice of what to wear, what to come back home, what to study, etc.
What do you think are the necessary steps moving forward?
Just never give up. Every people who are inside and outside of Iran, like continue asking their rights, stand in front of the person or groups who they don't see their benefits in ever of. Young generation and generally people of Iran. And our job here is to be the echo of the voice that is coming from inside of Iran and hold this voice. I'm pretty sure we will win soon and get our freedom back if we just don't care about anything except our goal. World will face with the largest revolution, which it was started from women.
And how would you like to see Iranians in Canada and non-Iranians respond to this situation?
It would be better if they cut off the voice that is coming from inside of Iran and hold this voice, as I said before. Also cover the news about the protests and solidarity in and out of Iran to make activists, feminists, and people who are working in UN to do an action for the people of Iran who are killing by the regime for gaining their basic rights.
Okay. Well, that about covers everything I wanted to talk to you about today. Is there anything else that you would like to talk about or mention before you wrap up?
No.
Okay. Well, thank you for your time, Ben.
Do you want to change the state of the world, but instead you keep buying material goods to satisfy whatever desire you have in that very moment? Me too. But now you can do both. Rock Shop and Community Thrift is a local vintage shop that fulfills your 1970s alt-chic fantasy while also supporting at-risk people through their compassionate and supportive work training program. All of their profits go to the PHS Community Services Society to support ongoing healthcare, harm reduction, and health promotion projects in Vancouver and Victoria. So stop by their two locations, Community Unisex on West Hastings or Community Frock Shop on Corral Street. And if you know any other local businesses that deserve recognition for their generous business practices or their contributions to the community, please DM us on Instagram at CITR and Discorder because we would love to spotlight them. Because hey, if you can't stop buying, you might as well start supporting. Mega Mall's debut EP, Escape from Lizard City, goes live on Friday, July 1st. Buy the cassette and lyric book on Bandcamp or stream wherever you listen to music. For the last 2.5 years, you could avoid everyone except yourself. Welcome to Lizard City.
Welcome back, everyone. Thank you for tuning in to Against the Current, a weekly news radio show brought to you by CITR 101.9. For our final segment today, we've compiled interviews with two community members and an executive member from the UBC Persian Club named Peshman Hamidi about their thoughts on the recent events in Iran. The community members we've spoken to include a friend of mine named Ava, whose name has been changed to protect her identity. We've spoken with Ava because we believe her experience as someone who lived in Iran during the beginning of her childhood and has since lived in Canada for most of her life adds to the diversity of perspectives we've heard since speaking to Niku, an Iranian international student, and Romina, a Canadian-born Iranian woman. We've also conducted a written interview with Leigh Cosmi, a person with mixed Iranian and Canadian heritage who still has family members in Iran. To quote Leigh, the murder of Mahsa Amini is just one of many horrible and gruesome crimes committed against women in Iran. Many think this is the first time women have been beaten, tortured, and killed at the hands of men who claim to be delivering justices. However, Mahsa Amini was just one of many instances. Leigh believes the reason her murder was so significant to the uprising of women is woman saying enough is enough because of her age and the circumstances of the event. She was 21 years old. She was not a threat to anyone around her at all. And she was killed by one of many like-minded people who believe women should be controlled.
I feel that the significance of the death of Mahsa Amini was a lot to do with almost the catalyst of what the people wanted to change. There was already a lot that a lot of people were unhappy with living in Iran under the regime, but it was her death that kind of triggered this uprising, specifically amongst young people as well, that's it, we've had enough, this cannot continue. And it was kind of a turning point. And I think that was the significance of her death specifically.
Leigh also commented that this is not a war on religion. It is a war on women's rights. And she thinks... Leigh also commented that this is not a war on religion. It is a war on women's rights. And they think that the publicity it got through social media allowed internal Iranian conflict the final be publicized and understood, and taking place during a very sensitive time in history where women's rights are being challenged, not only in the Middle East, but in the United States as well. They think that women and men alike take this situation very seriously, especially when there's bloodshed, such as in the case of Mahsa Amini. Leigh has noticed that many people focused on the religious aspect of this matter, and that many racist people will use Jeanette's death as an excuse to attack and abuse those who choose to wear the hijab. The right-wing media is also playing a large part in this misconception that Islam is the reason for women dying in Iran. As Leigh has said before, this is not a revolution on religion. It is not even a revolution started by religion. It is a revolution based on sexism in Iran that allows average civilians to take the law into their own hands and kill women who they believe are not modest enough. However, this narrative doesn't sit well with misogynists, according to Leigh. A lot of media is run by misogynists, which allow for non-factual, unrelated content to be broadcasted and consumed, and Leigh finds this quite frustrating. I also asked Pejman from the UBC Persian Club about the club's official stance on the recent events in Iran.
That's a good question. Starting with UBC Persian Club's stance, we were originally always a non-political club, and our goal was to always support the Iranian community. But recently, the ways that we can support the community has needed to be changed a little bit. So we are, especially with the happenings at Sharif University, I'm not sure if you heard about it, the situation became more societal than political. And then that's when we started most of our programs in support of the Iranian community here and in Iran. Jina Amini, of course, the straw that broke the camel's back in Iran has been a very sad and unfortunate happening. That's and this is one of the many I'm trying to word this correctly. This is one of the many unfortunate happenings that is going on in Iran, and this one particular event was recorded by a journalist, and we can see about it. But this sort of thing happens on a daily basis. If you talk to anyone, they know either themselves or someone in their family or friends have been affected by situations like these. I'm not sure if in your interview with Romina, she talked about her experience potentially, but
So very recent, like right almost after Mahsa Amini's death and when the protests began, there was a lot of difficulty for trying to contact people who were living in Iran. So I personally still have grandparents that live in Iran and also distant family members. And not only could we not access them through, you know, social media, like WhatsApp, Instagram, because their internet was down, we also couldn't phone them through traditional phone lines. So for example, I remember on the day that protests began, my mom spent about, I think, an hour or 2 hours trying to contact people, but the phone calls would never go through. And she tried multiple people. So it was very nerve-wracking, for sure. And it's just this idea that, you know, when as an immigrant who has left Iran, part of the reason why we left is because of, for example, the injustices that occur in Iran, specifically towards women. And now that I am here, I really wish for the people of Iran to feel what I have, to have the to have the privileges that I have here, So hearing about something going on back there, I almost wanted to be there to also help the people there, but I knew that the conditions there were also not safe whatsoever for protesters and then even families of protesters. So it was a bit of a nerve-wracking moment, and I would say nervous and conflicted. I felt very conflicted. Yeah, so pretty much right after the protest started, I think that weekend there was also a protest here in Vancouver, and I went to that one with my family as well as another one in Kelowna. But there's also a lot of, like, for example, my opinion regarding those protests is that sometimes they're not, they won't reach our target audience. I mean, they've been ongoing for, I believe, the last couple of, almost for the last month, they have been consistently having protests on the weekends. And although it helps to kind of to foster the sense of community between the Iranian people here, I don't think it's doing enough to share the message about what's really going on in Iran. What is it that we want to change? What is it that the people who are currently in Iran want to be changed? Yeah. And as a side note, it's also for a lot of the people who are here in Vancouver, we can't blame them for not going to protests or stepping up, because there have been a lot of talks about how the regime might basically ban people who are involved in protests here from going back to Iran in the future. So there is this sense of, like, there's a risk associated with even going to protests here in Vancouver.
For Lay, many of her little cousins, including their grandma, uncles, and aunts, are still there living in Iran and living amongst the revolution. Their cousins are still in school. However, with the internet being cut out for days on end, it is very difficult for them to study and for her to communicate with them. Lay has tried to bring them to Canada, but they've told her that they want to stay in Iran and fight with their people. So the best thing that Lay believes she can do is to be their voice through their social media, which is what she tries to do, because their family members cannot post themselves, which Lay finds very stressful.
That's a good question. I have people reaching out and asking me, especially in the beginning, hey, I saw this on Instagram, what's happening? And then we would have a conversation, and then they would let me know, hey man, sorry to hear this. Let me know if you need anything. And I really appreciate that. But I think the best thing we can do right now, both Iranians and non-Iranians at this point, is to keep sharing the stories, keep sharing the clips that are recorded in Iran and are sent over here somehow through a VPN, or the clips that show the reality of what's happening. And because the Iranian regime has a way of twisting everything. For example, there's been a major protest in Berlin. Well, not a protest, but everyone in the street. I'm not sure if you've seen the picture. Everyone's standing, and then in solidarity with people in Iran. And Iranian propaganda, or Iranian news, let's say, reported this as a protest from the people of Berlin or Germany against raising gas prices. So if you look at the picture, there are Iranian, like, Iranian flags from before 57, you know, 79, before 79. You know, the original flag of Iran, like, people, you can see it was, and the clips that are coming at event, you can see it's in solidarity with people of Iran. But other clips that you can see coming from Iran is how the Iranian forces interact with people and how they treat people and protesters, and some clips that are hard to watch and break your heart, and there are some clips that give you hope and bring a smile to your face. And I think we need both types of those clips, and we need to all see them and know what's happening.
Can you tell me more about your own or the UBC Persian Club's involvement in local protests here in the Vancouver area or at UBC?
Sorry, can you say that again?
Can you tell me more about your own involvement or the UBC Persian Club's involvement in local protests, such as those in Vancouver or in just the campus?
Right. Well, I believe there are Saturday protests in front of Vancouver Art Gallery. Those are independently planned, and it's not through UBCPC, obviously, but as individual members of the club, we support, obviously, support and attend those protests. Our role as the club, from the club's perspective, there seems to be other ways we can do to help the community. Other than the protest, there might be some protests in the future, that we, some peaceful protests that we probably might consider planning. But at the moment, it seems that there are other ways we can help community, either through holding roundtable discussions, hearing everyone's opinion, and hearing the potential solution that they might be thinking about, or financial helps that we can give to students who are in need, and planning workshops to help with their mental health. I think at the moment, the club is taking a different route to helping. And I really like and agree with what route they're going, what the path the club is taking. But of course, we support the peaceful protests that are happening in Vancouver, around the world. There was one day, I believe, 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago, that simultaneously around the world, there were cities planning, there were protests planned in different cities all over the world at the same time. And that was really interesting to watch footage from everyone in the streets. And I think that is important. Those are important for people in Iran to watch and know that we stand with them, that we support them. And that picture, for example, the protest in Berlin in solidarity with people of Iran, that picture is worth a million words. And I can imagine that someone in Iran who is struggling with lack of support, that picture might give them some hope, because as Iranians here, we constantly wonder what we can do to help, what we can do to, they might seem to be a helper. It might seem that we can't help them at all, but in any way that we can, we should help. And I think that type of support through protests, even though it might seem insignificant, I think it's a good help.
Mm-hmm. For sure. First of all, like, it's very it's still ongoing. I think that inspires me the most about it, is knowing that it wasn't just a 1 week thing. It wasn't just one instance. And like, even though, like we said, the death of Mahsa Amini was kind of the catalyst for it, it's still ongoing, and I think the effects of it are still being felt both in Iran and around the world. So I'm really glad that the people are kind of stepping up and saying enough is enough. And once again, what inspires me more so about it is that at the moment, I feel like the majority of protesters are around my age. So they're, you know, university students or even high school students, and they're fighting for a better future where maybe they can be more free and enjoy what we would consider normal human rights, or what we don't even see as privileges here.
And that is all for our show today, folks. Thank you for tuning in to Against the Current, brought to you by CITR 101.9. Don't forget to tune in every Tuesday at 11:30 a.m. for your weekly dose of timely and relevant news.
We just played Velvet Dinosaurs and their latest hit, Eating the Plate. Now, let's go to the phones and hear what you have to say. Go ahead, caller, you're on the line.
Smash the dirty red scum! Take it in the teeth, redheads!
Really?
Kill!
That's really
kill! Wrong. Kill! Filthy bastard tummies! I hate them! I hate them!
Okay, well,
You know, maybe you should relax a little bit. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
Because I never really wanted to be anybody else. I was just frustrated with the world around me not understanding. So I kind of wanted them to understand more than I wanted to change. So, because it's... There's certain things I would like to improve about myself, but I don't want to